and this is the Age Group Multisport Podcast with me, Richard Conway. This is a platform for age group multisport athletes to showcase their journeys. To another episode of the Age Group Multisport Podcast. Hope you had a happy Christmas. Recording this to go out tomorrow, which is the day after Boxing Day. Hope you had a great Christmas day and Santa was kind. On this episode, we speak to age grouper Mark Saggers. Mark sent us an email through with a little bit of a description of his background, and he stated that he was a kid of the 80s and was brought up with a running background following the likes of Seb Coe and Steve Ovett and Steve Cram. He then was in the forces for over 30 years and dabbled with still running, but also got into triathlon, a little bit of age grouping in there as well, which we discuss. And he's since come out of the forces. He still works for them on a consultancy basis. But he's now based in one place, which makes life and training a lot easier. So we get into all that. And he's also started a vlog on YouTube, which I have been watching with interest to see what he's been doing. So, yeah, we mention all that. And really nice chat, really nice chap. Really enjoyed it. So I hope you do too. He got some confirmed dates via age group news on Instagram, who shared the dates for the European Triathlon Multisport Championships, starting with the opening ceremony on Friday, the June the 14th, followed by the sprint duathlon the next day, June the 15th. And then the standard duathlon is on the Sunday, June the 16th. On the Tuesday, the 18th, it's the cross duathlon sprint. Wednesday, June the 19th, is a practice day. Thursday, June the 20th, is the cross triathlon, standard. Friday, June the 21st, is the aquathon. Saturday is the middle distance aquabike and the middle distance triathlon, as well as the award ceremony. So that wraps up the week. So if you've qualified and you can now get your flights and your hotels booked for around the time that you need to be there, so good luck with it all, and I'll see you out there. I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank all the guests that have been on the podcast in the last year. You really have made it a good year. I've had some fantastic guests and some fantastic stories, and yeah, keeps growing and growing. So thank you ever so much for coming on and sharing. And if you'd like to do the same as our previous guest this year, next year, then just get in touch with us. All the details of how you do that will be on the end of the show. I was a bit sad over the last couple of weeks. Noticed that quite a few bikes have been stolen. And one of our previous guests, Donald Brooks, who was on the pod, he had his stolen from his garage, a couple of Specialized bikes. And I'd reposted on our AMP Instagram page the details for him, and hope he manages to get something back. Go onto Donald's Instagram page and find out what bikes exactly were taken, and if you can help him out with any information, just get in touch with him, and I'm sure he'll appreciate it. It's a really sad, disappointing world when things like this happen, and I know it happens on a regular basis, but it's still very disappointing when we put our hard-earned cash into these expensive bikes and somebody just comes along and takes them. Yeah, gutted for him. And as it's been a festive season, we haven't really got any podcast reviews because we've been too busy, so we've not really listened to any podcasts over the last week or so. And did watch a bit of cyclocross today, which was amazing, over in Belgium. Big three were riding, Tom Pidcock, Matthew van der Poel and Wout van Aert, and they finished 1, 2 and 3. So, yeah, really good race. If you've not seen any cyclocross, have a catch up. You'll be able to find it on YouTube, I suppose, or Eurosport. And yeah, give it a watch, because it's really, really entertaining. So on with the main event. As I say, Mark Saggers, really nice chap. Really enjoyed his story. And yeah, if you like this and you like to hear what Mark says, he says more on his vlog over on YouTube, and it's called Just Do It. So give that a watch. See what you think. Give one. Good evening.
Evening. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thank you for taking your time out and doing this. Much appreciated. We'll start off. You can explain who you are, introduce yourself, and then just get into how you what you did as a kid growing up, like sporting wise, and how you got into multi-sport.
My name is Mark Saggers. I've been around multi-sport actually since early 2000s. But to get to that point, I think it is worth getting the context of our youth and what got us into that multi-sport place, because everybody's got their own journey and their own reasons, haven't they? And I very much see myself as a product of the 80s running boom.
Right.
If I said the older guys would probably know what that term actually is, but for the younger guys, it might not. But in the 80s, the big boom, London Marathon starting, and running in general really exploded, you know, grassroots level, athletics clubs, road running clubs, it all really exploded. And of course, we had some characters around then, didn't we? Covid sort of rivalry. Yes.
It was a superb time, wasn't it?
Yeah. And luckily, you know, at an early age, in the beginning of the 80s, where I lived, which was near Leicester, a town called Market Harborough. So the main athletics focus was in Leicester Coruscant Athletics Club. And lucky enough, where I lived, we had an international guy there, Dick Callan. He's got a book out. And unfortunately, he was around when Cohen Ovitt were around and Steve Cram developing. But he was kind of on the cusp just behind those guys. So although that says how good he was, but because of the caliber of people around at that time, he wasn't as well known. But luckily, he sort of took me under his wing when he saw me doing crazy hill sessions at 6 o'clock in the morning, and said, "What are you doing?" Because I was only a youngster then, and I was just mad for it. And I used to train every second of the day, but not very constructively. In many ways, things haven't changed. But it definitely, that was what the seed was sown then. And ever since then, I've done pretty much endurance sports with some breaks along the years. And I developed quite well as a youngster, but like I said, the grassroots level, you know, I ran a 32-minute 10K and I was nowhere as a youngster. And then as I was growing up, I still carried on competing. And I decided, you know, as I left school, I wanted to join the RAF. So I joined the RAF in 1983.
Yeah.
That was pretty much, you know, probably the fastest and fittest I was. It all went downhill from there. Not massively, but it's that change of lifestyle. It's a change, you know, how you exist and what you do, you know, taking on a career, especially one like that, that the running did take a back seat, and I kind of stagnated, got some injuries and diversified into some other sports along the way. But I always returned to running. And I ran okay, got some RAF representative sort of representation medals and vests or whatever you want to call them. But even then, the RAF had some great guys, Roger Hackney, Steve Jones, of course, marathon world record holder.
Yeah.
You know, I can proudly say I was in the same race as him, but never saw him. it was a great time though, looking back. So, and that kind of, yeah, I've always done sport, endurance stuff. Like I said, when I used to come back to it, though, I never quite got back to that standard that I was as a youngster. And but I guess that's just how important consistency is, isn't it? Mm. And, you know, especially as an older guy, I meet people now who sort of, they're not as fast as they were, and say, "Oh, I had a 10-year break," and it's just so difficult. It's easier to keep going than it is to have that massive break and then try and get back to it. But and as I progressed in the RAF, I carried on with the sport. And then by getting a commission, which is a good career move, it's progression, but it's a lot of training and a different way The course was nearly 8 months, and then another trade training courses and things like that afterwards. And it was during that course in 2002 that I got the bug for doing multi-sport stuff, triathlon. Because one of the guys who I got to know on the course was a GB age group representative triathlete.
Right, okay.
And he was telling me all about it. And I got back into running mainly to prepare for that course. And, you know, it came back quite quickly. And I was one of the fastest guys on the course at running. But, of course, unbeknown to me, one of the regular fitness tests you had to do was called the knocker, which was basically a cross-country run where you carried your goggles and wore your swimming trunks under your shorts straight into the pool, strip down to your trunks, jump in and swim 400 meters. And that was the fitness test. So it was about 3 or 4 mile run and then a 400 meter swim. The competitive side of me kind of got frustrated because I was always first in the pool, last out of the pool.
Well, yeah, as I say in this podcast all the time, like swimming is, it's so technical, isn't it? And if you haven't been swimming as a kid, then you're always trying to catch up because it's just, I mean, running can be a bit technical and biking's a bit technical, but nothing compared to swimming, is it?
No. In general, you know, running and cycling, the harder you train and the harder you try, the faster you go, which swimming is kind of the opposite in many ways because you can't thrash your way faster.
Yeah.
But I remember, I think I was taking about 16 minutes to swim my 400 meters, which was, you know, that's drowning type speed, isn't it, in many ways. But the frustration got to me because I was it was really frustrating. So I got chatting to this guy and he gave me a few pointers and a few tips and the seed was sown. And after I finished all the training for that course and I was then posted to my first sort of unit, I sort of took some proper swimming lessons, enrolled into a number of these endless pool establishments that are still around now where you could get the underwater filming and all this kind of, I really sort of threw myself into it. And obviously, you know, you try really hard in your dedication and technique stuff, you can make huge gains to begin with. So that paid off and I entered some competitions and I was doing all right, really. The biking came quite quickly, to be honest. And so that's how I got into it. And then I joined RF Triathlon, which was really just really growing massively at the time in terms of a club sort of atmosphere within the RAF. Although it was national and overseas, we all kind of got to know each other and we had training camps and things like that. So, that's what got me into it.
And in that that sort of environment, is the coaching good?
Yeah, the RAF Triathlon had a number of coaches. And it was quite well structured in terms of training weekends and different regional sort of constructs to help you with coaching. And most units that I went to, there were other guys who were doing it as well. You know, strengths and weaknesses. And in general, there's always somebody who could pick up the slack of one or other of the disciplines. But you're absolutely right. I met a number of guys who got into it, you know, after me, and they're like, oh yeah, I used to swim as a kid, and you know, as soon as they get in the pool, they're gone, and you're like, crikey, I'm working my butt off here and I'm getting nowhere, and you're just in there. And I think that kind of stayed with me all the way through, even though I did get to a reasonable standard with triathlon, you know, from a rear pack swimmer to a mid pack swimmer kind of thing. But always playing catch, always feel like you're playing catch up on the bike. And that's a common story, isn't it, as you say, for a lot of guys.
Yeah, and it's more noticeable on the shorter events, isn't it? If you're a poor swimmer or even a mid-pack swimmer, in the sprint especially, but standard as well, you're in a losing battle, aren't you, really? You're never going to make it up, I don't think. Whereas the middle distance, longer distance, you've got that time, haven't you, to try and claw back, and it's doable. Even the pro show, it's doable, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that's my best performances have been where I've had that opportunity to catch, especially middle distance, where proportionally the swim is probably, you know, disproportionately small, isn't it, compared to the bike and the run. So, Apart if you go to some of the, like I went to Almere, where it ended up being 4K swim. I didn't enjoy that one.
So how did it progress then from when you were in the rough and training? Did you get to enter many competitions? And
The RAF, as I said, it was growing in terms of a club at the time, and so we decided that we're going to put on our own sprint series across the RAF, and that really captured a lot of people and brought them into the sport as well.
Yeah.
And that's what it was designed for, to be honest. But a lot of the fast, experienced guys would enter those events as well. So you had a huge range of abilities. It was a bit like park run for triathlon in many ways, because we'd encourage people to come with their shopping bikes and on whatever else, they'd just come and have a go.
Yeah.
And it worked really well. We were getting a huge number of people racing, and that really brought people into the sport. And then we would have the duathlon, triathlon, sprint championships. Inter-services was a big thing against the Army and the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And people could get selected to represent the RAF in those events. So I took part in all of those things. Because I was a relative late starter, I was pretty much, you know, a veteran right from the start.
But what age did you start, Mark?
When I was on that course, I was 38, turned 39. So by the time I was getting into triathlon, I just turned 40. So,
right. But it's such a good sport, isn't it? Because you can pick it up at any age, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a good thing. If you've been, even if you've done different sports, you've got that mentality for one as an older guy, where you know, triathletes are known for sort of their tech and dedication and planning and stuff, I think. But as an older guy, yeah, you can transition into it. And I know, you know, just over the last 3 or 4 years with COVID and getting to know a lot of people virtually, I've got more virtual friends, I think, than I have physical friends. But, you know, some guys I know started into their 60s and they're still on that upward, transition to improving, which is great. And that's what keeps it going. That's why the age group thing is good, because you're looking to improve.
Mm.
But I did some, obviously some civilian events. And like you said, you know, 2011 was probably my best year in terms of middle distance, where I actually won my age group in the British Championships. But that was off the back of a good bike and a good run. Yeah. So, and then the RAF sort of kept on getting in the way of many things, or I would have done the GB thing a lot earlier, because I have qualified registering many times. I finished in a qualifying position and they just didn't fit for whatever reason. I was somewhere sandy or other things that just didn't fit with it. But now I'm not actually in the RAF, although I'm a defence contractor by my job now. So I've still got links. But I haven't got that kind of restriction. I lived in one place more than 2 years, which is, it's just a bit easier to put things together.
Yeah. So just going back to finding out about age group, you said you found out through a colleague at work who was into it. What was the progression from like doing all this within the RAF and then stepping outside the RAF and deciding that you were going to try and race for GB?
The internal RAF setup was obviously so easy just to get into, you know, it was done in work time for a start. You know, you don't get much of that kind of element, you know, dynamic, do you? Because it was seen as good teamwork, good physical work. So that was easy. But a lot of them, the RAF would we created some, I say we, because I was on the committee to help organise stuff. So we would nominate key events, key civilian events that would add towards an overall RAF championship. So that meant the RAF guys were entering established civilian events. And some of these were obviously qualifiers for GB and that. So the whole construct became a lot clearer to me. And then a couple of events I'd finish on the podium and think, well, actually, if I'd have registered, I could have qualified for that, you know, that kind of.
Did you know about all the registration beforehand, or were you told after you'd raced? Because that happens quite a lot.
Yeah, now, I think originally I didn't know, just because I simply wasn't considering it, or you're just not immersed in that kind of environment. But I think back then, I mean, we're talking pre-2010 and you know, it wasn't as easy to get the information as it is now. Everything's a lot more accessible now.
Yeah.
But yeah, after a while, I realized that I could have qualified, or could have done this, could have done that. But, you know, when you're moving around so much with your job, it's very difficult to plan ahead. Mm. It just felt like I couldn't commit to it. But the one I did commit to was a middle distance one, to, like I said, in 2008, to go to Almere, which was the World Long Course Champs. It was accessible. It was in Holland. And actually a finishing place in the Vitruvian, which was the RAF middle distance championships, which I'd entered. That time got me into that world championship event. So that's the only one I've done, which I think the qualification criteria obviously is a bit different for the middle and long, isn't it, in terms
of... Yeah, it is. It's like you said, you just put a time in, don't you, rather than having to actually go to a qualification race for the sprint and the Olympic,
And I think I like the dynamic for the sprint Olympic standard kind of distance better. I don't know, it just seems it's a better goal. It's something, it's definitive. You finish a position or your percentage if you're finishing time against the winner and things. I quite like that. I don't know. It just seems...
But I know what you mean. You're actually racing against a group of people, aren't you? For example, the Darley Moor race for the duathlon. It was an actual race. We all set off together and, you know...
Yeah, I didn't realise you must have been there when I did it.
I was, I was. Didn't go too well for me. I pulled my Achilles about 600 metres from the line. So, yeah, not great. It's a nicer outcome, isn't it? Because you feel as if you've earned it, I guess.
Yeah. Like you say, not to belittle the other long course, to be honest, there's probably no other way of doing it because of, you know, for one, the events are quite costly to enter, you know, quite difficult to sort of manage. And I get why they do it as well.
Yeah.
But I just like the goal of qualifying. That's my main goal earlier on this year was Darley Moor to qualify. And it was good. And it was a different dynamic because it was shorter, draft legal, which I'd never done before.
Yeah, I mean, that's fun, isn't it? Did you find it fun?
I did. I find it massively fun, actually. I need to work on my transitions, but coming off that first run and onto the bike and think, well, you know, I've got to make that pack or I'm gone. Even if I've had a brilliant run, that's what you've got to do. So it was a case of I was just off the back and it's like, it doesn't matter if I empty the tank here, unless you do it, you're going to be out. So, it was fun. But the pack on those laps just got bigger and bigger and I wasn't sure who was on what lap or anything.
Yeah. And counting the 8 laps as well was a bit of a...
yeah. I put little strips of sticky tape on my bars and rip one off every time I go past the start.
That's clever. So from your first GB qualifications, what happened and how did it progress?
Well, I think that's the thing. It didn't really progress. I mean, that Almere one that I did for the World Long Course, which... I did that and I really enjoyed it and I did okay, to be honest, even though the swim was a complete mare and I swallowed so much water, you wouldn't believe it. But it ended up being about 4K. But I really enjoyed the bike and the run afterwards. Mm. And that does fuel the fire. But what I found was, again, like I mentioned with my job, it was just so difficult to commit ahead and plan things because I didn't know where I was going to be 1 year to the next. And then you get detachments for 4 months, 6 months at a time. And it was just quite difficult. So, for instance, in 2014, I planned to do some really as high-level races for me that I could do because I was moving up an age group. And I know a lot of people do that, and it's well worth doing. And so I planned to do some races there, and I got detached and overseas and things like that. So I didn't really end up doing anything. Yeah, so it didn't really, after 2008, it didn't really progress, even though I did finish, like 2014, I finished, I think it was second in the, for a qualifier for the duathlon, a newbie haul, I think it was that year. And that I think that's the point where I suddenly realised that, is all this swimming worth it as well? And then in 2015, I was posted to Saudi Arabia. Where, you know, training was a challenge in its own right there just because of the temperature, and you do not want to cycle or run anywhere in Saudi Arabia on the roads. It's just like a death wish. So it was compound training where you lived and indoor training. So the years ticked by and the opportunity just didn't fit basically for GB racing. Even though I kind of thought, well, I've got the ability to perhaps do this and be competitive, but everything else was just, it just didn't fit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, life takes over, doesn't it? You know what I mean? We do this as a hobby and we do it to keep fit and all the usual. And, you know, life gets in the way, so.
It does. And that's sort of where the point I found myself in. I mean, I left the RAF, Saudi Arabia was my last tour, which wasn't ideal sort of preparation for leaving because, you know, leaving the service after 34 years and then having to sort out your life, your home, your family, another job, and from overseas is quite difficult.
Yeah.
And of course, then the whole sort of multi-sport, though I was still very keen and motivated, it was just very difficult to do anything but tick over for a couple of years before I could sort of settle. So then before you know it, you're into 2019, and the job I'm in now is based in Bristol.
Right.
So I was living away from home during the week, coming back, and, you know, that made training difficult. So really, you know, I was just ticking over for a number of years until then COVID hit and I could work from home. And then it suddenly things started to pick up a bit in terms of, well, I've got a base and I can do some structured training. And I think it's almost like a rejuvenation period for me now, even though I'm getting older. So,
Okay. No, I mean, it's good that you've come through the other end of obviously a difficult time, you know, coming out of what is sort of an institute, isn't it? Your job that you were in, trying to come back into Civvy Street, as they call it. Like you just said, get a job, get a house, settle down. You know, it's a lot to contend with, isn't it? So, you know, you can't do everything.
No, and you know, I thought it would be more straightforward, you know, and I won't, you know, I'll be honest, I struggled when I left, you know, struggled mentally, struggled with the whole doing things differently, because you are institutionalized after such a long period of time, whether you realize it or not. And so now being more settled, as I think, has really rejuvenated myself to actually do these kind of representation goals and races, because I'm simply more able to apply the time and focus, whereas previously I wasn't. So
No, but I mean, it's great that you've actually got that in your mind now, and that's what you're going to do. And from a health benefit, obviously a healthy guy anyway, but going forward, keeping that going and progressing and getting fitter, probably, rather than declining. It was an interesting comment in your email, was to that effect, wasn't it? About as we're getting older, not declining as much. And we've said this a lot on the podcast. The aim is maybe not getting faster, but not getting slower.
It's a real, for me, it's a, and I think it is for many people who've been competitive, it's a balancing and a mindset, isn't it? Because you in your mind you think you can still sort of perform as you did perhaps a bit younger, and you struggle, well, I've struggled to sort of accept, well, I'm never going to be as fast as I was or do the times, why am I even considering that and getting down about it? You just need to, you know, am I slowing down slower than I want to, or, you know, are you minimizing that decline because of age? And that's a mindset thing, isn't it, which I'm quite comfortable with now, to be honest.
100%. I mean, at the end of the day, we look at it as a lifestyle, you know. Look at the amount of people that at your age and my age in our age group that aren't doing this, you know. So you're probably in the 95 percentile of, you know, top of your fitness for your age, I would imagine, you know, because you're doing this and you're looking after yourself, and that's worth its weight in gold, regardless of where you come and finish, and, you know, just for your health, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And we tend to forget that, I think, don't we? Because we get so immersed in what we're doing. we don't realize how healthy you are relatively, probably, you know, to the general population. And I think you become more aware of your own mortality as you get older, don't you? I am much more now, you know. You start thinking, well, while I'm still able to do all these things, let's do it, let's create some memories and create some good times, because I'm able to. You never know, next year I might not be able to.
100%. I mean, that's a great way of looking at it. Let's make some memories. I love that line. I think that's just hit the nail on the head, hasn't it? Because that's what we're here for. Have a good time and make some memories and enjoy what we're doing.
Yeah. And most of us are so passionate about it anyway, aren't they? Do you know Paul Haslam, one of the age groupers? He's relatively new to it. He's up in Scotland. I've never met him, but if he's listening to this, he'll laugh, because I met him at a virtual Zwift racing league.
Right.
We always used to have a battle with each other, and now we sort of communicate all the time. And he went massively into the GB racing scene, and he's doing really well. And he's in his 60s, and he's exactly like that. I said, well, I've I can do all these things. I'm going to fill my boots while I still can.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great way, great attitude to have, and a great way of looking at things. So you're in a club?
Yes. As I said, I spent all my multi-sport kind of thing in RAF Triathlon. And a lot of people remain in there as a club construct because you can do that as an ex-serving.
Right.
But in, when was it? 2012, I came back from Afghanistan and we came back to Staffordshire near Stoke-on-Trent because that's where my wife is from. And I was at RAF Stafford at the time, although it's MOD Stafford and it's Army. There is an RAF contingent now, does air-to-air refueling, or rotary refueling, I should say. So I did a tour there when I came back, and I joined the local club, Newcastle Staff's Tri Club, not to be confused with Geordie Newcastle Tri Club. And I joined those guys because it was, you know, it's good value to train with the groups. They had good group rides, a really good club. And then, of course, I went away to Saudi. And when I came back and left the RAF, we settled back in this area. So I rejoined them, Newcastle Tri Club. And it's still a really, it's quite a big club. It's really, really, really inclusive. They've got loads of training sessions and it fits really well. So I'm the treasurer for the club now. So I look after all the money. And I like that kind of thing as well, not just doing the competing and things like that. You know, being inclusive with the whole construct. But it's a good club. And I think, you know, first thing people should do if they're interested is join the local club, because I think most clubs are the same in terms of being welcoming and, you know, well advised. No matter what standard you are, nobody's elitist. Nobody's elitist where we are, even though there's some really top guys, girls there.
And are you just coached by the club, or do you have you gone down the route of a personal coach?
That's a good question. That is, I'm not coached by the club, although the coach does have a number of, you know, graded coaches. There's some grade one, level one, level three coaches there as well. But in the past, I've had some really good friends who are qualified coaches in the RAF, and they've offered to coach. And it's me that I deem myself uncoachable.
Now you've said that, I've just watched one of your blogs about, I haven't finished it actually, and it's this very thing. So that must have been subconsciously in my head.
Yeah.
I watched half of it, yeah.
I used to get, there's a guy I got to know on TriTalk, and he lived in Canada, and he gave me some real good help in swimming virtually, and that some other stuff that to do with cycling and running. So he used to give me some, I wouldn't call it coaching, but he gave me some good, really good guidance. And then I had a friend who gave me some structured week by week coaching, just as a freebie to test stuff out from a business he was developing. And, you know, I just couldn't get on with the structure of here's your sessions and the mentality of it not fitting. I can't fit that one in, can't do that one. Something's changed. You know, my life just seemed too topsy-turvy to have that structured plan, and that my personal mindset then struggled with that feeling of, well, I can't do that. I missed that. Oh, I can't. And it ended up, the whole thing just ended up feeling too stressful. So for me, it's that flexibility, I think, of knowing what I'm doing and learn, but I've learned that over the years. I must admit, I was known for being a very heavy overtrainer. And I probably got injured in the past because of doing that. And looking back in hindsight, yeah, I did overtrain and pushed it too hard. But I think I'm in that position now where I can be flexible enough and wise enough to sort of scale it back when I need to, which is what I'm doing now on that series on the YouTube vlog. It's a very top level plan, and that's as detailed as it goes.
Yeah.
For me, it's just about key sessions, and those key sessions, when I've last done one, I'm happy that I've done that. And then I think, well, when am I ready to do the next key session? Well, I'll wait and decide when I feel like it. So,
keeping it simple, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Works for you, you know, doesn't necessarily work for everybody else, but it's
exactly,
about you at the end of the day. And what works, you figure it out, don't you? Like you say, after you've been doing it for a while.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, you know, conversely, they need that structure, and I get that. Some people may need that as their hook to make sure that they do it, or they do it right and they're happy that they've got that guidance. Like you say, everybody's different. And it did change a lot for me when COVID hit, where I stopped swimming because we had to. And that point in 2000, end of beginning of 2020, was where I kind of switched over and sort of considered myself a duathlete rather than a triathlete. Because once the pool started to open again, I just lost my swimming mojo. And I quite like the fact that I wasn't dictated to by swim times and then the extra cost of swim membership and the time you had to put into swimming to make a really small gain for somebody like me who's not got a swim background. I just thought, what's the point? I'll just concentrate on what I'm better at. And yeah. So I'm quite enjoying that now. And the swimming, the reason I say that is because of the planning and the coaching. The swimming, although I enjoyed it, it always seemed more of a, it was getting in the way of the other two disciplines rather than embracing it enough. Yeah, that's kind of made me feel even more confident in a way with sort of, well, I think I know what I'm doing better just by running and cycling. And as you've probably seen, the strength training, which I think is probably equally as important as we get older. So,
yeah, again, this is something that comes up a lot, you know, strength as we're getting older and muscles diminishing and sarcopenia, exactly, yeah. You know, creeping in. And it's just like, you only need to do 45 minutes, a couple of times a week, basic strength to just keep yourself going a bit more if you want to build, you know what I mean? It's so important, so vital, especially as you're getting into your 70s and 80s.
I'm sort of convinced that that's, you know, the year that's just finishing is why it's been relatively better than the last previous 5 or 6 years, is because during the winter I went back to the basics in the gym because I felt I needed to. And from research, and like you say, there's loads of stuff out there saying how great it is for older people. The trouble I think we have as multi-sport athletes is accepting that is really, really beneficial and getting the mindset right, because often we think, well, that's getting in the way. I could be running, cycling or swimming while I'm in the gym doing this, and you feel like you're losing out rather than doing something that's
good. And then there's the old I'll do some hill repeats because that's I'm gonna strengthen my legs either on the bike or running, you know. I don't really need to go to the gym because I'm doing this, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, but it's different.
it is and you know, I always, the youngsters we train with now are sort of try and get them to start now. Don't wait. Start now.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's funny, I was listening to a podcast, the Geraint Thomas cycling podcast, and he had Matthew van der Poel on, and he was talking about, oh, well, do you go in the gym? And he said, oh yeah, all the young guys go in the gym now, all the cyclists, you know, it's part of our training plan. And he says, do you not go in the gym? He said, well, no, I don't. I've never gone in the gym. He said, I asked my coach whether I should start because of like all the young kids doing it. Yeah. And the coach turned around to me and said, oh, don't bother. I think it's because he's coming to the end of his career sort of thing. He said, you don't need it. You've got that much in you. But yeah.
Well, I guess those guys are, you know, the top of the game. And if they've got to retire just when I was starting, then it's different, isn't it?
Different. I just thought it was funny, though, that even the cyclists are now incorporated in the program.
There's more knowledge out there. There's more research, you know, to back up the benefits, I think, now. And obviously, when Geraint Thomas started 20 years or even more, when he was a youngster, that wasn't there the same, was it? Yeah. It was that culture of cycling is more miles, more miles.
Yeah. Just go out and ride. That's it. Yeah. That's all you need to do. You're not coached, but you have got a wealth of experience under your belt. You've started a vlog. That word does not trickle off the tongue very well, but you've started this vlog. So the first question is, how did it come about? Because obviously I've started this podcast in a similar sort of mindset. How has it come about? And basically, why did you decide to do it?
Well, the very first episode of the vlog, I kind of alluded to my blog, not the vlog, but the blog, because in the early days of RF Triathlon, everybody had a blog. So I created a blog and I quite enjoyed it. And this was 2008 that I started it. And that was just obviously the written word and photographs. And then people would comment, encourage each other or take the mick out of you or tell you how stupid you were. And I like that inclusive kind of you know, the, you could interact with people who were the other end of the country or in a different country by doing that. And I like that, especially in the RAF where we're all at different units and, you know, your best buddy might be 100 miles away or something. So I carried on, and that's still going, you know, right. That's from 2008. But
what,
over the year,
what platform's that on then?
That's on blogspot.com, I think it is. I'll give you the link if you want.
Yeah, send us the link over, yeah. Because
yeah.
Andy, who was on the last episode, he was the same. He'd done a blog since probably about the same time as well, 2010. And it was fascinating to... And I'm sat there thinking, God, I wish I'd done something like that to record all. I mean, his was so detailed. I don't know about yours, but his is so detailed. You know, he started running all his running races, and then he got into triathlon, then he got into TT, and it's all there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And what a record to have. It's just brilliant.
Well, that's a good thing about it. See, when lots of people were doing it, I never thought of it along those lines. We were just doing it. And then as technology sort of got better and the written word and blogs were less popular, but I just carried on doing it because it was like a diary. And then I was thinking, well, I've got two daughters who are growing up now. I thought, well, maybe when I'm old, they might like to read what I used to do. So I carried on doing it. And then the comments got less and less and then nothing. And it was, but I thought, just carried on doing it as a diary. And I was... for a number of years thinking, well, nobody's reading this apart from me, but hey, never mind. It's a good record. And I have to look back. What was I doing 10 years ago? And, you know, there's race reports on there and other stuff. So that was going. And then I'll give credit to my wife, actually, because she was saying to me over a year ago, I think, she said, you'll be good at doing a vlog. Why don't you do a vlog? And I was like, no, it's too costly, you know, too much time. I haven't got time to do that. I put it off and put it off and put it off. And then I suddenly thought about it. I thought, actually, I quite fancy that. So I just started doing it with my phone, which is why everything's so clunky. And it still is. It's only a couple of months old and I'm still learning, because you've got to learn how to do the editing software and things like that, which was totally new to me. But I actually do like it. And one of the reasons, again, my wife kept suggesting it was because working from home, it's so easy just to be, you'd have your dinner, you sit down and you'd be like, I'll just check my emails. I know I've got to do this tomorrow. I'll look at that now. And before you know it, you're working 10, 11 hours a day, but you're only getting paid for 8 hours a day. And you work more at home than you were at work. And there was no end to it. There's no defined cutoff. And what I found, my wife was saying, well, you need something to occupy you more, because I thought about going back to education and I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But long story short, that was going to occupy me after work. That was part of the reason for doing it. And it absolutely has done, because, you know, I can churn videos out and concentrate on that and not think about work. So, and I'm doing, it's all on the topic that I enjoy. So, and now actually thinking about, oh, I'm going out training, now what do I need to, what footage do I need to grab from that kind of thing, adds a different dynamic as well. And like the blog, you're more inclusive and, you know, other people make some comments or, you know, other people are watching it and you end up watching other people's and you're reaching out to other people like-minded, like I said, and I'm really enjoying it. But I think I've got a long way to go to make it a better product.
but isn't that, I think that's the fun of it all, isn't it? I'm on a few podcast forums and Facebook pages and people are going about, oh, what about numbers and what about this and that? And forget about that. Just what are you doing it for? You know what I mean? You're doing it just, we've got a reason that we're doing this. I'm doing this because I can connect with you guys. You know, I've met over 100 age groupers now doing this, you know, and you go to races and people are saying, ah, yeah, you're right. And you've got that connection, like you're saying. And that's what you're doing it for, meet people, find out things, you know, you're educating yourself by talking to different people from different walks of life. And it's just, that's it. That's what I'm doing it for. I'm not doing it for anything else.
I know. So, It's that enjoyment factor. And, you know, it's not about, you know, YouTube clicks and likes and, you know, subscribers, because, you know, I don't say in mind, please like and subscribe and, because I don't really care if you subscribe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, if you're interested, then great. If you're not, then fine. And I've had people from the club talking about stuff I've done and why do you do that then? And things like that. So, you know, it's a very niche field as well, isn't it? So it is. you're targeting it at certain fields. It's not, you're not after celebrity sort of numbers and stuff like that. So it's the enjoyment. And I think, you know, the passion for it. Once I get training and I start filming, I can almost get carried away sort of talking. And
you know. How'd you come up with the title and how'd you come up with the format?
I don't know. Because I switched over to duathlon, I think, I was really quite excited to have that. You know, when I was the goal for Darley Moor was all about duathlon stuff, running and biking. And that has caused me to sort of return to my roots for running a lot as well. Really enjoy my running much more than I was when I was doing triathlon for some reason. But and the title, so yeah, I guess I was just so aware of, well, I'm just doing duathlon now. Just do it, just duathlon. Hey, I'll call it that. It was just sort of stumbled upon, really. And my daughter, who's, well, she's very artistic. She's developing her own brand and doing loads of great creative work. She's going to create me a logo now. So I'll take it to the next level and have a logo.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I've got a topic for you. I don't know whether you've actually done it because I haven't watched them all. You just mentioned it earlier on in the podcast. Transition. There you go. You said you're not very good at transition. You've got to do one on transitions. There.
I think that's a really good idea, actually, because you know you could do a really good spoof one, couldn't you? <As well>. This is how not to do it.
Yeah, you could actually.
Yeah.
Before and after.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at Darley Moor race, I had those New Balance SC Elites. They're good shoes, apart from ripping the skin off of my feet in certain places. But I hadn't really nailed down and practiced properly in those shoes, to be fair, which is a schoolboy era. And although the laces had the quick lock on them and stuff, I just hadn't loosened them enough. So coming to T2, they're a lot easier to get off and put on, aren't they? They weren't elastic laces either, which I don't know why I even thought that was a good idea not to have elastic laces. And I just found myself trying to force my foot in a shoe that wasn't going to accept my foot. And then you start cramping up because you're flexing your calf and stuff. And, you know, you feel like you're in there for at least 5 minutes. And then, so it didn't go well on that. But it is a good topic, though. It's a really good suggestion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially coming up to race season and stuff like that in the spring. And
100%. Yeah. And everybody needs to do it. And I don't know about your club, but our club, we start to put those sorts of things in before people are racing. We'll do a couple of sessions on, you know, nothing fast, going through, breaking it down and doing it slowly and, you know, working out which way works best for you. And
well, that's half the battle is doing it slowly, because as soon as it comes to race day, your head's on fire anyway.
Oh, yeah. And red mist, isn't it?
Yeah. To keep your composure is quite difficult, even for the experienced guys.
Yeah. Well, even for the professionals. And, look how many times the professionals have run out of transition and with the helmets still on. And, you know, they all do it.
Yeah. Well, I've got an added restriction, and I've got real delicate soles on my feet. I'm literally got, yeah. If I get off and running barefoot on the concrete, I'm like tiptoeing and hopping and screaming, which isn't good for triathlon, because you do a lot of barefoot running in transitions and car parks with stones in. Absolutely hate them. But you know, a sprint duathlon, draft legal, you need pretty slick transitions if you want to be competitive. I think you really do.
It's got to be in the 30 seconds, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, thanks for the topic.
No problem. If I think of some more, I'll send them over. But really enjoying them. I'm glad you got in touch and mentioned it in your email, and glad that I've got to see them because they're good. So I enjoy them. You're very personable to listen to and watch, if you know what I mean. Not everybody is, you know what I mean? It's watchable is what I'm saying. So keep it going.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. I feel like I say there are improvements to make it a better experience. Like, for example, I don't know if you've seen the last one where I did a park run last weekend.
Yeah, I did. Oh. I just watched that today.
Yeah, is your head still okay from being shaken around? Because I carried the camera.
but isn't that, I know what you're saying, it needs to be better, but isn't that where you're at? You know what I mean? You're going through this journey like we all do, and you've got to get better at it. I mean, I've just upgraded my laptop not just because I'm doing podcasts, but the last laptop I had, the camera was dicky and it was all the, yeah. I couldn't hear anything on the speakers. So it's just that process of going through step by steps. And, you know, you look back in 5 years' time and think, God, was I really that bad? You know what I mean? Yeah. Well, yeah, you were, because you've not done it before. So, you know, don't beat yourself up about that. It's just, it's a learning process. And I think the key thing is, like, within our sport, it's the same within creating anything. Just enjoy the process. I say it at the end of every podcast, enjoy the process. And it's the same, you know.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you need to sometimes draw yourself in, don't you, and remind yourself, hang on a minute, I'm enjoying this. Let's relish the moment and not dismiss it. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
100%. So, yeah, well done. Well done for starting it, and keep going. So you've qualified for Portugal.
Yeah.
Next year. You're going to go?
Yeah, I think so. I say I think so because things are, you know, things are better on the work front, stability and things like that. It's just, I think in my mind, I've still got, can I plan that far ahead? I think it's almost like PTSD of, ooh, I can plan, I can do it. It's kind of getting used to that kind of thing. And the dynamic, I think, of, well, I'm going away and having a holiday abroad that I love doing, and my wife's going to be at home looking after the dogs. And so there's a big element of, is this really fair as well? Which I guess a lot of people have conflict, you know, with. Yeah. And it's a thing, isn't it? You know, it's costly doing these things. Isn't cheap, is it? But it's your passion. But, you know, so there's balance to be struck everywhere. So I guess, but I think my intent is to go, because for one, it's first year in the age group. I mean, there'd be loads of fast guys out there, even, you know, who are older than myself. But it's probably the best chance I've got of doing as well as I can do. And why not just give it a bash and see where it goes? Because, you know, before you know it, the year will be gone again and you'll be thinking, oh, I could have gone there, could have done. I don't want any regrets. So,
Yeah. Couldn't persuade your good lady to go for a holiday?
Well, the thing there is, she's been on so many trips, sporting trips with me.
Right.
I think she's just totally worn out from it. And, the experience for our partners isn't the same as it is for us, is it? I get her point of view. She's been to a lot of events with me to support me, and they've been long distance events.
Yeah.
You know, she might see me for 5 minutes. You know, over 5 hours, it's not thrilling, is it?
No, it's not.
So I think we need to make sure that we have, you know, our family holiday time, and then, you know, the sporting element can be done and dusted.
That's fair. What have you got planned for qualification races next year then?
Well, that's a good question, because I've only just read through some of the stuff, and they've planned quite way ahead, haven't they, in some of the locations. And it's really interesting. So I guess the short answer is I haven't really looked at it hard enough to make any plans, because I'm so focused on, first of all, the 24th of March for the British Duathlon Champs, which is Oulton Park, which is relatively nearby, and it's standard, no drafting, which suits me well for, you know, TT bike stuff. I've not really thought ahead to other qualification races, to be honest, but get my finger up.
Well, I mean, there's plenty to aim at, and it depends, you know, what you want to do.
So
it is just sitting down, isn't it, at some point and working it out.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and then training towards it. So you're going for middle distance or Olympic?
Just standard in duathlon.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I've kind of moved away. I've done a lot of long and middle distance stuff, and I'm really enjoying the short, hard training. I think, for one, it seems like I'm not spending as much time training, because I'm not going to focus on any, I need at least 3 hours on the bike today or something. It's bang for buck, I think. It just feels like, I enjoy it for one, but it feels like it's easier to squeeze in.
Training for it.
Yeah. And I think as you get older, you need an element of speed. I know we could possibly be, and a lot of studies have verified it, that actually the older you get, the better you are at the endurance events. But I think we need to keep an element of speed, you know, high intensity stuff as well.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll go back to longer stuff.
Yeah.
When I'm even older.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I've read the Joe Friel Fast After 50, and he recommends. You've read it, yeah, and he recommends, doesn't he, in there that it's important as we get older to keep that intensity going. You know.
Yeah, I think so.
Irrespective of the distance you're training for, really, you should be doing it at whatever you're training for. Put some in there. So what does a week of training look like at the moment?
At the moment, well...
You should have just said, just look at me vlog.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, it is on there, basically, because to be... At the level I'm looking at.
For those who haven't found you yet, and they will do after this.
Well, I don't know. It might put them off. But I think the plan is basically, if you look at, let's call it 6 months, is about seven. So 2 months of lower intensity, what people would term as base training. But I call it strength training, where the focus is really on the gym work and strength. And then I'll take over on the bike and run. So I've done that. I've now moved into the next phase, which still maintains the strength and conditioning, but I change the format slightly and do a bit more focus on plyometrics, single leg stuff, balance stuff, and then one compound session with bars and weights, just pure big exercises. So you do the compound stuff to begin with, then you try to tailor it a bit more into the running focus with plyometrics. And that's where I am now. So a week of that I'll do a track session normally, because that came in this phase as well. On a Wednesday, and I'll make sure I do one kind of sweet spot kind of effort on the bike session, an hour and a half, which is the most intensity I want at this stage. So there's no VO2 max, there's nothing like 2 minute, 5 minute efforts. It's all sort of sweet spot, maybe, you know, yo-yoing some under overs over 30 seconds, and then some endurance stuff. But running wise, I don't do a long run like traditionally. I think it wears me down, fatigue wise, and stops me training productively for the next couple of days afterwards. Mm-hmm. So my longest run is probably 10 or 12 K. Sometimes the track session is the longest I've run. Yeah. But I think a lot of that is because I know I've got the endurance for it at the moment, and I can still run a decent 10 K, off that training. So I may do a bit of reverse periodization and chuck in a few kind of steady tempo longer runs, because the standard distance duathlon, as you'll know, that's quite a lot of running. It's like 10 miles of running almost.
Yeah.
So staying strong on that second run will be key. But I do think the strength and conditioning carries over to that. And like I've said to many people, I don't do the long run because I fool the legs into thinking I've done one by doing that bike run endurance to built up to two and a half hours. So there might be an hour and 10 minutes of running, but the whole session is over 2 hours with the bike interspersed in the middle.
Yeah.
I think it just saves the legs a bit, but you get the endurance and the long run benefits from it without doing the mega miles.
Sure. So, no, it's very sensible. I think it also cuts down on injury, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's prime as well, because I have been injured in the past a lot from overtraining. And I just don't feel like I need to do a really long run. We'll see how it goes this year, because, you know, the standard distance, that's quite a lot of running in one race. But, see how that pans out.
Yeah. And do you do an FTP test?
I haven't done an FTP test for ages.
Yeah.
What I tend to do is try and take note of it, is the best way of putting it. On a 25-mile time trial. So I try and enter an open 25 time trial and say, well, what power am I pushing there? Because that's an honest hour. I did one in August when I was building up, 57:30-odd, but my power was quite low. And in many ways, I think if you're doing a 20-minute FTP test or a Zwift FTP test, you get a false FTP. And could you really push that for an hour, the result it gives you? I'm not confident I could. Because Zwift the other year gave me 280 watts FTP. I'm thinking, there's no way I could ride for 280 watts for an hour in a time trial. Because I'd done a 25 and a 50 recently, and, you know, I'm around 230 watts for a 25-mile time trial.
Yeah.
For me, I'm very light, so that produces a sub-hour time trial, which is okay. Mm. But FTP tests, 20-minute tests. I can't remember last time I did one.
No, that's interesting, isn't it? I think they're great just as a guide and just as a reference point. I mean, I've just done one, and I've you know, it just alters so where you're working from. I mean, you're doing something anyway, aren't you? You're doing the time trial, which sets the benchmark anyway. So
yeah, I mean, it might not be. You could argue it's not current. I mean, I set my FTP on Zwift at 230 watts. So if I'm doing it in erg mode, that's using 230 watts. And to be honest, well, an FTP from August when I was in quite good shape to put is probably not that accurate to what I am now. But I get a lot by feel. So I kind of know what the feeling of sweet spot is. I know when I'm busting over that by feel, and I guess that's just works for me. Whether other people may want those regular numbers and data.
I mean, it comes from experience as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Right. I think we're unless you've got anything to add, we've got quick fire questions, and then.
No, it's time to tick by, hasn't it? It's great chat.
yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It just goes, doesn't it? The time just goes. Yeah. It's so the first one is, what's your favourite bit of kit?
I think it's got to be the Smart Trainer. You know, the bit of kit that's kind of been a game changer. When COVID hit and I knew I was going to be stuck inside, I need one of these Smart Trainers. Because prior to that, you know, I was living away and, you know, moving around a lot, like I was saying, I would take a set of rollers with me.
Yeah.
Because it was easy to chuck my bike on. I could do it in a stairwell, but it wasn't productive training. As soon as I got onto the Smart Trainer and got Zwift account and all this kind of thing, it's just a whole new world because it's inclusive. You're sucked into it. Definitely Smart Trainer.
No, cool. I mean, it is. It's invaluable. It's just changed the way we train and everything, hasn't it? It's just
massively
fabulous bit of kit. 100%. What resources do you use for any of your training, or just in general help you train and, you know, compete?
But
in your case, we could have two answers here, because it could be for the blog as well. How do you get your ideas? And
I think in terms of ideas, it's just training. For me at the moment, it's more on what sort of equipment is going to make it better. Because I'm at that point, like with the park when I mentioned, it just didn't work well. And I think there's, for a running type sporting vlog, you need that action type shot in there. So I'm working at that, and perhaps enhancing the camera and getting something that's more appropriate and better use. In terms of performance, I didn't realize actually until I was, because I've heard on you asked this similar question on your other podcast, was probably upgrading my Garmin watch to one that's got music on it and downloads via Bluetooth. Because I had one of the really, really old Garmins.
What have you got?
I've got the Forerunner 245 Music now, which isn't the high tech one, but it is far better than my old one, which I think it was an old 305. It looked like one of those mountaineering GPS things that you had on there. And also the Wahoo head units for bikes. I really like for the bike, for example, it's like having a sat nav. So that's made when you're riding outdoors so much better, so much easier. And the power and real time data feed coming from both of those things. Like now, if I'm running or even on track sessions, the Shox headphones that I've got on now and the Garmin 245 watch, it's just all there at your fingertips to. Yeah. You can see how you're running. You can switch your music on and off. It's just coming from your watch. There's no wires. And so I guess in terms of equipment, quite like that kind of thing, But I've tried to stay away from Strava. I hate the Strava weekly restriction and getting sucked into, here's your training week. And then it'll start again. This is what you're doing now. It's the beginning of the week. You're back to zero. I that's why I like the 9-day week for me. It fits better. Because you get more recovery and
And how many days of recovery do you take in that 9?
Well, very rarely do I actually have a whole day doing nothing, I must admit, because I just actually feel better, even if it's just a 20-minute head refresh, sitting on the turbo, get a pace partner at 1.5 watts per kilo, and you know you're going to stick to that, don't go above it. And it's just an easy flush the legs out and then a bit of mobility and stretching. That is my day off, to be honest. Which I think is better than doing nothing for me.
Well, again, it's personal preference, isn't it? It's what works.
Yeah.
What advice would you give anybody wanting to get into multi-sport from a beginner point of view and also from an age group point of view?
Well, yeah, that's a good one, isn't it? I guess everybody says the same thing, and I kind of think that it's right, is you do need to contact your local club, I think, because there's so much resource there for people, and they're so friendly, and, you know, you could go down the route of either getting the wrong kit or the wrong expensive kit or something, because it is a lot of kit involved. But I would say don't get hung up on the kit, the stuff that you enjoy, and then work your way through to the stuff that you feel will make it easier for you. I don't want to focus on kit and stuff, but to run, you need a pair of trainers. If you're going to bike, you need a bike. And a lot of people don't have those things, but they may have the desire to do it. I mean, for example, our club has turbo trainers, this kit you can loan and things like that. So that would perhaps give them the opportunity to try before you buy, which would probably be wise.
Great answer.
I remember the first bike I bought when I started out, when I was doing that course, RAF course, back in 2002. I remember going in the bike shop and looking at it, and he says, "Oh, this will be the only bike you'll ever need." And now I think, well, what a hard sell that was. You always need another bike.
Well, not only that, but look how things have evolved, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Since that day. And finally, what are your short and your longer term goals?
Well, short, I think, is, like we said, is definitely the British Duathlon Champs in March. Every time I say that date, it fills me with dread, because I hate racing in the cold weather. And it could go either way in March, couldn't it?
It could.
Longer term, that's a good question, really. I think longer term is to carry on with this focus of minimising the loss of ability and capability, and doing more stuff to minimise that. Strength and conditioning, especially, and not getting injured. Because that last year was the first year I didn't get injured, and I put that down to the strength and conditioning. And I think it's just to train wisely and keep doing it, I think.
Yeah.
And then the races will just fall out of that.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great attitude to have. No pressure then either, is there? Well, thank you ever so much for taking your time out tonight and coming on and sharing your wisdom. And, great story.
Like I said, it feels kind of self-indulgent, but, it's the passion of what you enjoy, isn't it? And you can feed off each other, I think. So.
Yeah. I think that's the point, though, isn't it? It is self-indulgent, but, you know, you were talking about your daughters going back and reading your vlogs and things. I think for me, this is, it's quite self-indulgent. But this is always, like your vlogs now, they're always going to be somewhere. Years to come, your grandkids and your great-grandkids can look back on your vlogs and stuff. And I have the same thing with this. I think they can all look back and listen to what great-great-great-great-granddad used to do back in the day, you know what I mean? Because it's there, isn't it? So I just think it's a really poignant, nice tool for somebody in the future to, it's like a time capsule almost.
It is, right.
Right, well, it's been lovely to speak to you. Been a real pleasure. I'll be watching out for your future blogs.
I'll credit you when I do the transition one, but I've got to figure out how to do it first.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll look out for that, and if I've got any other ideas, I'll send them along.
Requests always well received.
Well, enjoy the rest of your evening.
And you take care. Thanks, Rick.
Take care. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye. Well, thanks, Mark, once again for coming on. Much appreciated. Really enjoyed chatting. Really enjoying watching the vlogs that you're putting out. I haven't quite caught up on all of them as yet. I like the rawness of them, the realness of them. Like I said in the episode, get over to YouTube and put in Just Do It. That's DU, as Mark explained, it was for duathlon. And watch a few of his vlogs and like and subscribe to his channel and give him some support, because he's doing this for himself. He's also putting some information out there which you might find useful. And that's about it for this episode. So thank you once again for taking your time out to give us a listen. Much appreciated. Hope you have a great new year, and we shall see you in 2024. And if you'd like to come on the pod and share your story, you can do so by getting in touch via email at agegroupmultisportpodcast@gmail.com.
We're also on Instagram, where you can DM us at amp_1967. We're on Facebook at AmpGB, and you can find us on X at Age Group Multisport Podcast. And all our podcasts are now on YouTube at AmpGB. That's our own channel. So, yeah, please do get in touch. Please do come on and share your story. Always looking for guests. And if you have enjoyed this podcast, I'd really love it if you could share it amongst your friends, family, teammates. You can leave a comment on Apple Podcast and on Spotify. And it would be great if you could subscribe, like and follow whichever platform that you listen to it on. And that's about it. So don't forget, stay safe, keep training, and love the process.